Let's get started. How's everybody doing? Enjoying the conference so far? Excellent. Good. Then I'll try not to make it worse and disappoint. Okay. My name is Scott Klein. I don't like to put up these brag me about me slides, right? There's my email address. There's my Twitter handle. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. Happy to answer any questions. I'm with Microsoft. I've been there two to three years. Today, we're going to talk about high availability and disaster recovery scenarios using SQL Server with Windows Azure Virtual Machines. So before I get started, who's familiar with Windows Azure? I recognize a few of you from my previous, right? But anybody have virtual machines deployed in production? No? SQL Virtual Machines? In Azure, yes. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about SQL Server Virtual Machines in terms of how you can use these from a high availability and disaster recovery perspective. And the reason we talk about this is because a lot of customers and a lot of you probably have you probably spend a lot of money on duplicate data centers. So you probably have your primary data center and then a redundant data center, and you probably spend a lot of money on that redundant data center, right? And if you were watching the news maybe about a year or a year and a half ago, you know, this big hurricane came up through the east coast of the United States and just wiped out most of the east coast of the United States, right? And took out, which surprised everybody, it pretty much did some damage to even New York, right? And so a lot of the big businesses, I mean, that's, if you're familiar with New York, a lot of financial districts, things like that are up there, and they were out of power for quite a while because even their redundant data center was in New York, right? Now, some were smart and had their, right? But they still spend a lot of money on this redundant data center. And so what we're talking about is saying, you know what, you could have saved a lot of money and still been up and running had you had your failover data center in Azure, right? Think about that from, you know, how much these guys are paying in that for that redundant data center. Not only, you know, for renting the hardware to the overcost of the people and the electricity and things like that, right? Where in Azure, you don't pay for that, and yet so the cost of ownership is much cheaper, right? So we're going to talk about two scenarios primarily, and we'll get to that in a minute, but how you can use from a SQL Server perspective, how you can use Azure from a failover perspective, high availability and disaster recovery for a much less lower cost, right? So again, first of all, thanks to our sponsors. Yay. Okay, moving on. Okay. Honestly, you know, I joke about that, but it's because of them that, you know, we're able to do this. So stop by their booth and give them a big thanks. Okay, so I like to have this slide in my deck because it shows the continuum from we understand on-prem, right, and how much control you have moving from a on-prem environment to a cloud environment, where from a software as a service, right, the entire like Hotmail or Live.com, the entire stack is managed by the vendor, in this case Microsoft. What we're going to focus on today is kind of a hybrid cloud scenario, which focuses on our infrastructure as a service, right? Windows Azure virtual machines. So our agenda today is going to be the following, and more than likely, we're not going to make it through all of that. Okay, that's a lot. We'll probably make it for the first two, and maybe talk about. We'll probably talk about some of this a little bit. We may talk about performance, but you know, if there's specific questions you have about any of that, feel free to ask. We'll talk about the first, you know, overview in the first two or three, but we probably won't, just because of the amount of content, we probably won't make it through that. And it's the third one, the disaster recovery scenario, that most people are interested about. So let's begin with the overview. So if you're familiar with the infrastructure as a service, these are VMs hosted in Windows Azure. You have two scenarios that you can use these. If you have a VM already on-prem, you can upload that to Azure and run that and take advantage of the benefits of Windows Azure, right? The high availability, the the three copies, things like that. Or you can pick one out of our gallery, right, and spin that up. Okay, the difference between infrastructure as a service, the VM, is that you're responsible for the management of that VM. Okay, meaning licenses, patches, things like that. We will patch the underlying architecture, right? But we will not patch, if you have to patch SQL Server or the OS or things like that, you're responsible for the VM. This is the difference between infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. For the virtual machine, you're responsible for that, right? But it does use persistent storage. So you get, for that VM, you get that high of the multiple redundant copies. So if that virtual machine goes down, you can fail over to another one, right? It is pay per use, depending on, we'll look at this, depending on the size and how long it's spun up, right? We just increased, and I have a slide on this, I'll show you. We just increased the size of the VMs, okay? The great thing about this is they made a change not too long ago that you only pay for the VM when it's running, right? And this is huge, okay? You can spin up a VM, have it running for 5 minutes, turn it off, you stop paying. So as long as it's running is when you pay, because you're paying for compute. That means you can do things like have your administration SQL agent jobs, spin the VM up, have it run its jobs, turn it off, right? And only pay for while it's running. So that's huge. It's per minute, right? So only pay for when it's running. Again, you're responsible for the VM. It is not in preview, so this has been released for a while, right? But we're going to talk about specifically SQL Server on infrastructure as a service. So SQL Server and a VM. This is full-blown SQL Server, and when I jump out to a demo, I'll show you this. It is SQL Server 2012 and SQL Server 2014 on Server 2012 and 2012 R2. So you've got quite a few options to pick, okay? For the most part, it is 100% compatible. What we do not have is failover clustering yet, but this is why we have, with 2012, if you're familiar with it, we have availability groups. You guys familiar with availability groups, right? So in the two demos we're going to see, they both use availability groups, and we'll walk through that, okay? Again, you are responsible, since it's the VM, you are responsible for anything that has to do with that VM, or within that VM. So backups, things like that. If you need to back up the database, that's your responsibility, right? Things like that, okay? The cost of the license for SQL Server is actually built into the cost of the VM, so there's no additional things, cost for that, except if you take an on-prem VM that already has your licensed SQL Server on it and you upload that to Windows Azure, you're still responsible for the license of SQL. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, so let's, yes. So from a high availability and disaster recovery, there's a couple scenarios we're gonna talk about, but native to Windows Azure is the ability to do what's the Windows Azure storage. So if you're familiar with how the virtual machines work, when you provision a virtual machine, that virtual machine, the image, the VHD, actually gets stored in Windows Azure storage, right? You're familiar with that? The benefits of that are really awesome. You know what those are? So storage by default is geo-replicated, right? So everything is in triplicate. You familiar with that? So when you create a virtual machine, not only is it triplicate, but it's geo-replicated. So one of those copies is actually stored in the next nearest data center, okay? Meaning if you create a virtual machine in the North Europe data center, the third copy will automatically get stored in the West Europe data center. So for whatever reason, the North Europe data center ever goes down, for whatever reason, knock on wood, it hasn't happened yet, and I shouldn't say yet, let's say it hasn't happened, right? Then you're still up and running because you have a copy running in the North Europe data, or the West US data center, right? And I'll point that out in a little bit, I'll show you how that works, okay? So again, there's three copies. Everything in Azure is in triplicate, right? So it says optional geo-replication, and I'll show you what optional means. let me jump out and I'll show you that. Whoops, P. So in Windows Azure, right, you have your Right? There's all your service, the Windows Azure services. We're going to look at storage right there. Okay? So if we go to storage and look at our storage account, so let's look at any one of these. Okay? If you go to the configure tab up here, right, it says replication. Okay? By default, geo-replication is turned on. By default. What does that mean? That means anything that you're putting in storage, your primary and your, so this is, let's back up here. Let's pick up one. So here's North Europe, right? This is the North Europe, so I think this is in Amsterdam, is North Europe, okay? So in North Europe, that means, come on. That means my primary and one replica are in the North Europe data center. My primary and one replica. My second replica would be in the West Europe data center, which is in Dublin. Okay, this is on by default. What does that mean in terms of cost? So there's a cost associated with that. You guys are familiar with the cost? Data into the data center is free. You can load terabytes and petabytes of data into an Azure data center for free all day, right? Any data that leaves the data center, there's a cost associated with that, right? And it's extremely cheap. It's like, well, in US dollars, it's somewhere between 3 to 7 cents per gigabyte, right? So it's extremely cheap. But what this means, since you have this turned on by default, is that now you have data in order to synchronize your replicas, you have data leaving the data center from North Europe to West Europe, okay? So for the cost of that high availability, you're gonna pay for it. Cheap, but you're still gonna pay for it. If you don't want that, then you can change that to locally redundant, which means it now all three copies are in the same data center. Okay? So that's just something to keep in mind. If you want that, and the difference is locally redundant is three nines, 99.9% SLA. The geo redundant, I think, is either 99.95 or 99.99 high SLA. Okay, so if you want that extra, you know, point, whatever, right? Then, so that's, again, just something to keep in mind. It's on by default. Okay, if you don't want that, turn it off or go to locally redundant. Okay. So high availability, this is, high availability means if the VM becomes unstable, and that could be for whatever reason, right? The VM just crashed, or the rack that it's or the host that it's on has crashed, or the rack that it's hosted in has crashed, or some things like that, right? We will take that VM and move it to another host and restart it, or if we can't do that, if the VM is itself is unstable, we'll take one of the secondaries and promote that to primary, right? Okay. The goal, again, is 99.9%, so about 43 minutes of downtime a month, right? So that's if you've got, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. This is if you've got more than one copy of that VM, okay? This SLA includes downtime that Microsoft does. So if we have to patch the host layer or things like that, right? That's included in part of that, right? It does not include any unplanned downtime. So if you take it offline or the data center, you know, a meteorite hits the data center for whatever reason, right, that's not included in that, right? Disaster recovery, this is, and we'll talk about this, this is not data, this, we cannot put an SLA around that because in this scenario, this is you're on-prem. Okay, so we can't put an SLA around that. We can put an SLA around the VM that's running in Azure, right? This will make sense in a little bit when we talk about the disaster recovery. So any questions about this so far? We good? Okay, so let's move on. All right, so there's three scenarios that we're gonna talk about, okay? High availability within Azure. Most people aren't ready for this yet because this is everything in Azure. This is, we're gonna basically duplicate and create an entire SQL Server high availability infrastructure in Windows Azure, right? I'm gonna basically lift and shift, take my entire SQL Server infrastructure, move that to Azure. Most people aren't ready for that yet, right? But the second one is more realistic. More people are interested in that one because this is, again, the same scenario we were talking about earlier. Instead of failing over to another on-prem data center, let me fail over to the cloud, right? Much more, much cheaper, and much higher availability, okay? The DR across Azure data centers, this is has nothing to do with on-prem. This is, I've got one Azure data center and I want to fail completely over to another Azure data center. We're not going to talk about that today, but just keep in mind that that is an option if you want to use and put everything in, host most of your SQL in Windows Azure. Okay, so we're going to talk about the first two. So the first one, let's talk about high availability. Again, this is everything in Windows Azure. Okay, this is SQL Server high availability. So the technologies that work with this, this is availability groups, database mirroring, and log shipping. Okay. With availability groups, this is 2012 and now SQL Server 2014, okay? Zero data loss, the scope is multiple databases, not just one. So if you walk through the availability groups wizard, you can scope to multiple databases, not just one at a time, right? We do have automatic failover, right? So in other words, if something happens, you can have automatic failover. We'll talk about that in a minute as to what can trigger that, right? You do get readable secondaries, and again, the scenarios are, again, high availability on Windows Azure, right, and kind of a hybrid scenario. We'll talk about that more in a minute, okay? Anybody use database mirroring here? Okay, so you in this scenario, you can use database mirroring, but again, you're limited to 2012 and 2014, right? We do get zero data loss, but it's only scoped to on a per database level, right? Which is the challenges. So not the limit here is the readable secondaries, so it's limited to when you do a snapshot. Okay. And then log shipping. Most people don't do log shipping. Any log shipping people here? Okay, so we really don't talk about log shipping because most people don't do that. So let's talk about what we're gonna focus on is availability groups. And this is the demos we're gonna show you are availability groups. We talked about the SLA back here. Right, the 99.9% SLA, depending on how many VMs you have, right? And that has to do with this, right? Your SLA, right? If you have a single VM, right? You're only gonna get 99.9% SLA, right? But if you put an availability set, so more than one virtual machine in availability set, then you get 99.95 SLA. An availability set, if you're familiar with this, and I'll walk you through this in a demo, when you create a virtual machine or multiple virtual machines, you can put these virtual machines in what's called an availability set. An availability set is kind of like a boundary, right? So no one else can, no one else has access to that availability set, but what it does is it protects you from things like, failures, right? So availability sets includes things like upgrade domains and fault domains, meaning so that if Microsoft has to go patch, so let me say it this way. It guarantees that when you create multiple virtual machines, those virtual machines are guaranteed not to go in the same physical rack, okay? That's important because what it means is if the rack go down or the host goes down, or if we have to go through and do some maintenance and patching, as we take one offline, you're still up and running, right? So that's kind of an availability set. We guarantee that things will still be up and running for high availability when we have to go do maintenance. Does that make sense? Okay. So there's three scenarios we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the why, what, and the how. So how do you configure, or why is it needed, how you configure high availability, and what you can do with that, right? So the two scenarios, high availability Windows Azure, second scenario, disaster recovery. And for each one of these scenarios, we're going to talk about the why, what, and the how. So let's talk about the why, okay? This is important to understand, right? Because in terms of Windows Azure, right, Windows Azure knows the overall state of the virtual machine. It knows if it's responsive, it knows if it's hung, it knows if it can't communicate with the virtual machine, right? The hypervisor, we know what's going on with the VM itself, right? But we cannot peek into the VM, right? So even though the VM might be responsive, SQL Server might be hung, right? You've probably seen this in your VMs, or right? So we cannot determine if we understand the health of the virtual machine, but like the SQL Server service could be hung, or something else could be going on in the VM that we don't know about, right? Or you're servicing the OS and you have to reboot it. You've all seen like that. A VM has to reboot for whatever reason, right? Or you're rebooting, patching SQL Server, right? Things like that. So how do we detect and fail over for cases like that, okay? There's also a scenario where it's called the Azure self-service healing. So if there's something wrong with the host itself, but not the VM, we'll take that VM and move it to another host, right? And from an SLA perspective, we guarantee that it's not on the same host as the other VMs, so we'll move it, okay? There is a downtime associated with that, right? We have to turn it off, move it, and turn it on again, right? And it's about, depending on your size of the VM, it could be anywhere between 8 to 12 minutes, right, for us to move that VM. So while we're moving that VM, you need to be able to move fail over to the other running instance, right? Things like that, right? Or if you're upgrading the OS, right, and you have to restart the VM, things like that, that's about another 15 minutes of downtime, right? So there's certain scenarios of why you want to be able to fail over, okay? Well, this is very simple. It's essentially you're saying, all right, I've got a primary, I've got a secondary. This is all up in the cloud in this scenario. Basically, I'm going to take my primary goes offline, going to promote my secondary to primary, spin up another secondary, sync that, I'm all good, right? You're familiar with failover, so this is nothing new here. But this is essentially how it works. And again, this is all in the cloud, okay? So from in this scenario, what we support in all up high availability in Azure, we support, again, SQL Server availability groups and database mirroring. So SQL Server 2012, 2014, zero data loss, you know, readable secondaries, things like that, right? We do database mirroring, but again, it's with some limitations. We won't go into that. But because we highly recommend availability groups, there are certain benefits of using availability groups. And most of these benefits have to do with the ability to have more granular control over things like what causes a failover, right? Or how do we do automatic page repair? So there's something with if there's something wrong with one of your pages in the database, we'll do an automatic page repair, but still keep that up, right? Do backups on secondaries, things like that. The important thing here is that because of with availability groups, you get more control and more granularity over what causes or how a failover happens, right? And we'll see this in a we'll open the management portal. We'll be able to see this, okay? So what this does require, though, and this is what this is really neat and I really like, is the ability, there's a Windows cluster. So if you're familiar with Windows clustering and failover clustering, if you've done that before, this is the way to go, right? Nothing new here, okay? And I'll show you that. It does require, though, just like on-prem, it does require a domain. Well, great, you know what? So Windows Azure now supports Active Directory domains, right? We'll show you how to do this, okay? So there's some catches here. So what's not yet is, if you're familiar with Windows Azure, is that what's not supported yet is floating IPs, right? So there's some limitations, but it still works, and these limitations really are not going to affect how this high availability works, okay? We will support, every virtual machine gets its own IP, so you cannot have a floating IP between virtual machines, okay? Anything else I want to point out there? We will support floating IPs probably later this year. That's the plan, at least, okay? We also plan to support Azure's load balancer and things like that. What I want to point out here is, let's get to the how, because this is kind of the important piece, okay? Again, how do we provision this? So it's an Azure cluster, so you set this up and configure it just as you would on-prem. What this does is, because everything's up in Azure, it reduces the log latency. Again, you want to make sure, and we talked about this, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, the same availability set. This is, again, upgrade domain and fault domains, so make sure that everything's up and running. So if there's a problem with one rack or one VM or one host, it doesn't affect all your other VMs, okay? We'll talk about VNets in a minute. because I want to show you how this works, and we'll talk about virtual networks. What I want to point out here is that on how to set this up, you basically set this up as you would on-prem. Okay, there's only one major difference. Has anybody set up availability groups here yet? Okay, so if you're familiar with that, there's the cluster network name. Okay. Windows Azure, if you set this up in Windows Azure, Windows Azure High Availability does not require the cluster network name. Okay. However, you cannot set it up without a cluster network name, right? So the workaround for that is give the cluster network name a dummy IP address, set up your clustering, and then basically get rid of the cluster network name. That's right, because right now it's not needed. Okay. So bring it online and then remove the IP. Ready to go. Okay. There is a white paper on how to do this, right? So not too hard, right? But other than that, it's basically the same as you would set it up on-prem. The difference is this is now on Windows Azure. So what I'm going to walk you through is how to set this up in Windows Azure. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because what I want to get to is the second scenario, which is the disaster recovery. But I will walk you through this. Now, if you want the experience of setting this up, there's several tutorials. Any PowerShell people here? Okay. One. Anybody else? No? Okay. Yeah, I'm not a PowerShell guy either, but hey. So I know enough to be extremely dangerous, right? So if you want to set this up using PowerShell, there's a great PowerShell tutorial. However, what I would recommend is this, the UI, right? This UI, this is a Word document. Or actually, you can print. It's not a Word document. It's a. If you were to copy the entire web page and then copy it and then paste it into a Word document, it's 98 pages. Okay, but it is step by step by step. Right. If you walk through this and mess something up, you are in the wrong industry. Find another job. Okay, find another job. You cannot mess this up. This is extremely detailed on how to set this up. And I'll make the slides available so you can have this link, right? But this is a great example because I would highly recommend that you walk through this example because the same example can be used to set up the DR scenario, right? Between on-prem and the cloud, okay? So I would highly recommend what I did is I copied the entire thing, pasted it in Word, printed the Word document out, 98 pages, right? But it only took me about 2 hours to go through, only, right? 2 hours. But I had a fully functional working, and I'll show you this example, okay? All right, we do have if you want to use database mirroring, we do have a PowerShell tutorial. I don't have an example or a demo on database mirroring, but I will show you. Just know it's there if you want to set this up using database mirroring. All right, with that, let's jump out and do some demos. So first of all, So you can see. Come on, ta-da, there we go. All right, so there's several scenarios here. So the first thing to do, if you're familiar with this, again, we need to understand that this is just like essentially taking our on-prem environment and moving it to the cloud, right? So what I need to do, the first thing I need to do is go create a virtual network, right? This virtual network basically, so I've got two. The first one we're going to look at is the ScooterNet, okay? So if we look at ScooterNet, right? So in this virtual network, what I'm going to do here is it allows me to set up a virtual network. And in this virtual network, I can define subnets, right? So basically what I'm doing is I'm creating in the cloud my own little network that no one else has access to. This is my own little network. And there's my subnet. So I've got two. I've got a front and a back, right? I don't need two, but I created two. But I've got a front subnet and a back subnet, and there's my 10.10.1, 10.10.2, and there's my IP address ranges, right? So I said, here's my little virtual network that I have access to. Now you could also go and create your own virtual network using those same subnets, right? Because it's specific to your subscription, right? So they won't collide or crash, right? So there's my virtual network. What I then did is, if you notice, this is a, nope, not here. You go back to dashboard. You notice that I have four resources associated to that virtual network. So I've got four virtual machines. There's my domain controller, my Windows Server Failover cluster, and SQL 1 and SQL 2, my primary and my secondary. And those, they're I put them in the back subnet, but there's their IP addresses, okay? So what I did, the step through this, so first thing you do is go create your virtual network, and then the next thing you do is go create your virtual machines, okay? So that I have, in this case, I have five virtual machines, right? So Scooter SQL 3 is going to be in the next demo, right? So my domain controller, my Windows Server Failover cluster, and SQL 1 and SQL 2 are part of this demo. These are all four of these virtual machines are up in Windows Azure, and they're all part of the same network, okay? So the steps is, and this is what this document walks you through, create your domain controller, promote, or and let me show you how to do that. So new, if you've done this, new virtual machine from gallery. You guys can see this. So look at all these different virtual machines. So those SQL Server 2014, CTP2, 2012, SP1, there's more. Look at all those different SQL Server virtual machines, right? Running on either 2012 or 2008 R2, right? Enterprise edition, standard edition. So you've got a whole gallery of different SQL Server virtual machines. Again, you can also take your on-prem virtual machine, upload that to Windows Azure. It'll show up here in this list under, where's it at? My Disks. So if you upload your own VM, it'll show up here under My Disks, okay? So at that point, what I did is I went and created a Windows Server 2012 data center. So and promoted, did at that point, I did a DC promo, promoted that to my domain controller, right? It was assigned an IP address, and then I created another one for my Windows Server Failover cluster, right? So I have two of those, and then I did two 2012 SP1 Enterprise on 2012, right, for my SQL. Join those to the domain, okay, and then set up the high availability with availability groups, okay. Does that make sense so far? Okay, so it's the key here is to understand that again, this is all in Windows Azure, so I had to create my virtual network, create the virtual machines in Windows Azure, make sure I put those. If you look at this, I think I have to go back here. Let's go back to this one. Yeah, so I have this is my availability group. I called it Scooter AG for the Scooter Availability Group. What does this mean? This means that from a high availability perspective, it's the upgrade and fault domains, right? So that's guaranteed to be up if that rack goes down or things like that. It's uptime, 99.95% uptime. Putting everything in this kind of the same boundary, but different racks, different hosts, things like that for guaranteed uptime, okay? Again, what it does, so it tells me here's my disks. What this means is that this disk is stored in Windows Azure Blob Storage. That means that I've got triplicate redundancy, right? So I've got a primary and secondary in one data center and a third copy in a different data center because I have geo-replication on. But the key here for this is that I have these four virtual machines running in Azure with a domain controller, a failover cluster, and a SQL 1, SQL 2 node, okay? So what I'm going to do is let me RDP into one of these. I think, when I looked at this earlier today, I think there's something going on, but this will give you an idea of what's going on. So what I did, so once I had my domain controller and my Windows Server Failover cluster and SQL 1, SQL 2, joined those to the domain and then set up availability groups, okay? So let me fire up SQL Server here. I may not be able to connect because I think I'm having issues with this. Let's see if I can connect here. So there's my availability group. So show dashboard. There might be an issue here, but it's the same thing. So you see here, so there's a problem, but you get the idea. So what I did is I've got my database one. So I think my domain controller is having an issue, but I think that's something I did, right? I don't know why. All right, so I've set up an availability group called AG1, and you see that SQL 1 and SQL 2 are part of that availability group, and my DB1 is the database that is part of that availability group, right? It is set to automatic failover, right? And so you can see here, oops. Oh, I can't do that because I'm in there. You can see here that it is set to, in a demo I did earlier and a couple weeks ago, so I failed over from SQL 1 to SQL 2, so SQL 1 is now the secondary, SQL 2 is now the primary, but it's an automatic failover, and it says not synchronizing because I think there's something going on with the domain controller. It can't communicate with the server failover cluster, right? But what it did was, if I want to fail over, I can say, failover, right? And I can do and walk through the manual failover and failover back to SQL 1 and make SQL 1 back the primary. Does that make sense? So is this making sense so far? Just from virtual network, adding virtual machines to that network, things like this. Again, this is all running in Windows Azure, right? Setting up the Windows Server failover cluster, setting up the availability group, okay? I could probably fail over here, but I don't want to walk through that. So, because we still have a half an hour and I got a lot to cover. So does this make sense? This scenario is the one that people are like, okay, that's interesting, but it's not too interesting because it means I'm taking my entire infrastructure up to the cloud. And most people, again, are not ready for that, right? But again, we cover this because this is the same scenario, same kind of scenario that we're going to talk about when we talk about disaster recovery. So let's talk disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, this is the scenario that most people are interested in because it's instead of having a second data center that you're paying a lot of money for, let's fail over to the cloud. And this is why I gave the example of New York, right? So again, we're going to talk about the why, what's, and the how. So why? Look, how do you recover from a New York disaster, right? How do you recover from a hurricane comes through? How do you recover, right? It's hard to recover from that, right? So either temporary or permanent disasters, we need to be able to recover from that, right? And so if your data center's down, you know, how do you recover for that? Plus, you know, you're paying a lot of money for the site, right? You're paying a lot of money for that second data center, not only from rent and maintenance, but you're paying for the hardware, the operational costs, hard and soft, right? So it costs a lot of money. In this scenario, it's the same scenario as the first. The only difference is now we're taking one of those secondaries and putting those in the cloud in Windows Azure. So you've got your primary and your secondary, everything on-prem. The difference here is that I'm taking one of those secondaries or one or more secondaries and putting those in Windows Azure to be able to fail over. Does that make sense, right? So my primary and I got my high availability on-prem. By putting a one or more secondaries in the cloud, now I have my disaster recovery scenario. So we get both a high availability and disaster recovery, right? So the scenario here is pretty simple. I'm going to deploy one or more. I got my primary, my secondary on-prem. I'm going to take one of those secondaries, put that up in the cloud. And it is same thing. It is synchronous replication, right? And I'll show you that in a demo. Some things you have to think about when you're doing the scenario, right? We have now 10 data centers. So four in the US, two in Europe, four now in Asia, right? So we now just added two data centers to Japan. We will be adding another one to like Australia and New Zealand. Okay, New Zealand. And we are looking at putting more data centers here in Europe, okay? The problem here, though, is that what we run into is some countries say, hey, from a geopolitical perspective, you know, can you put data outside of the country's borders, right? I think Germany and France are an example where you can't have some data outside of their borders. But it's more just educating them on how security works in Windows Azure, right? The great thing about this is the cost benefit, right? So a low cost benefit from a VM and storage, right? How much do you guys pay for your SANs and your disks and things like that? A lot. You don't have to give me a number, but you pay probably an exorbitant amount, a very high amount, right? How much does it cost to store 1 gig of data in Windows Azure Blob Storage? Per month. Anybody know how much? About 5 cents. Now, let's see, that's, so in euros, that would be, 15 cents? No, other way. So it's somewhere between 5 to 9 U.S. cents. So in euros, that's probably 2 to 7 cents euros, right? So it's extremely cheap. So this is what makes it a beneficial for storage, because you're taking that VM, and the VM is 127 gig. So how much are you paying for that 127 gig per month? A couple bucks, right, at most, right? Just for storage, okay? And then the cost of the VM, and the cost of the VM, I'll show you prices for that. So this is, from a TCO perspective, this disaster recovery is looking more and more appealing to companies, because I'm not paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a month for disaster recovery, right? So you also have the other way around, right? So I've got, did I go the wrong way? No, I didn't. So I could also have, in this scenario, I've got my my primary and my secondary in the, my primary and one secondary in the cloud, and then one, my other secondary on-prem, kind of the inverse of what we just saw, right? So you've got some flexibility there on what you want to do, okay? Again, technology supported, 2012, 2014, zero data loss, you know, kind of, it's almost the mirror of what we saw with high availability, okay? So I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. Just know that availability groups, database mirroring, and log shipping is supported. Let's talk about what, okay? This is the ability, this is kind of the, what does availability groups allow you to, and how would you use this, right? From the scenario perspective, it does require the same thing. Active Directory, domain controller, adding these machines to your domain. But let's talk about some of those scenarios, right? What are the benefits of this disaster recovery scenario, right? So instead of having all this hardware, so we talked about this earlier, right? If I got a virtual machine, I'm not paying for it when it's turned off. It's still there, okay? Meaning, whoops, let's go back so you can see this. Okay, I have these virtual machines, they're running, but if I shut these virtual machines down, just click shut down, if it shuts that down, you stop paying for it. You're not paying for it anymore, right? What that means is that in these scenarios, if I need to do some workload or high performance workload, if I want to offload instead of having all this hardware sitting on-prem underutilized, then I can lower my costs significantly by having these machines ready to go up in Windows Azure. Turn them on, have it do my workload, turn them off. I've just saved a lot of money. Right? Does that make sense? So offload, read workloads to Azure. It's called shunting. Take a lot of the workloads that I would typically do on-prem, move that to Azure, have it do the workloads, bring that data back down. I only turn those machines on when I need it, right? We also see these in terms of being able to migrate apps or do our backups into Windows Azure, right? For readable secondaries. It also makes sense if I want to do reporting, right? If I want to do reporting or any BI, fire up the VM, have it do my reporting or BI workload, send off those reports, turn the machines off, right? So there are many benefits to having availability groups connected to my on-prem domain, okay? So let's talk about how. This is a little different, okay? And how it's different, how do you join your on Windows Azure VM to your on-prem domain? That would require what? Kind of VPN, right? Right. It means that I'd somehow have to have a secure connection between my cloud and my on-prem network, right? Well, this is what it means. So there's several ways to do this. Right now, it requires that you have like a Cisco VPN device, that, I'll actually show you that, right? So basically what we need to do is create a VPN tunnel between my on-prem network and the cloud, right? And that's doable today through a VPN device, right? Coming later this year is the ability to do that through software-based, through RAS, right? So you won't need a VPN device. Be able to do that through just Windows Server itself and RAS, right? That'll be awesome, okay? But other than that, you configure it just, and this is why I said to walk through that 98-page document, because you basically set this up the same way you would in the high availability scenario. The only difference is that you now have to configure that VPN device. So you have this little middle step that you have to configure, right? I'll actually show you that, right? But configure the SQL Server technology as you would on-prem. There's some tutorials on how to do this with availability groups, okay? This is on how to configure the kind of the VPN device and Windows domain. Some tutorials, I'll give you this deck so you have those. But a nice pretty picture, again, everything's in the cloud, or you've got your primary and secondary on-prem, and then you have your second here in the cloud, and what you have is this VPN gateway, okay? So with that, let me show you how this works. Mm-hmm. All right. So you can't see this, but I'm going to ask you to use your imagination, right? In my office at Microsoft, I've got my server, and it has a secure internet connection out. So it's not on the Microsoft Redmond domain. Okay, on that box, my box is the domain controller, right? And then on that box, I have three other virtual machines. So I've got the Windows Server failover cluster, and two SQL nodes. Two SQL nodes, right? So I've got my network on-prem, but then I have this, right? SQL Scooter or Scooter SQL 3, right? This is actually domain joined to my on-prem SQL box or my on-prem network, right? And the way I did that is the following, okay? So we looked at virtual networks before, right? So here I have, ScooterDR. Right, so there's a couple things I had to do, right? So I had to go define a local network. So step one is I had to define a local network, and I called it Scooter Local, right? This is the address space, 10.1.1.0, and then the VPN gateway. This VPN gateway is my IP address out to the internet. Okay, does that make sense? And then this address space comes from this virtual network. Come on. Okay. Right? Now, what this shows you here, is that I have communication between my local network, or my virtual network, and my local network, right? And you can see data coming in and data coming out. And this is my gateway IP address. This is my IP address out to the internet from my local box. Does that make sense? Are we good so far? So what I have then is on my desk, I have a Cisco 5505 VPN device, right? So from my box to the back of that VPN device, and then from that VPN device out to the internet. And that allowed me to do this. So I had to set this up as I would in the first scenario, but then go into the VPN device and say, all right, now configure so that these two are talking to each other, right? So I had to configure the VPN device, obviously. Does that make sense? Okay. What this allowed me to do then is now join, domain join. So once I had everything set up, I was able to go and let me RDP into this. Yes. Come on. Gotta love. There we go. All right. Come on. You can do it. All right. So you can see here, I think, that this is domain joined to, what's that? Where's my, come on. All right, so corp.scooter.com, that's my domain, all right? I thought you could be able to see it here, corp.scooter.com. But I am connected to the network, right? So I could sit here, so on my desk, right, is my domain controller and SQL 1, SQL 2. So I could do something like, right, ping SQL, whoops, type right, ping SQL 1, right? So I'm now communicating back over from the cloud to one of the VMs on my desk, right? We good so far? Right. Okay. So what I'm going to show you here is, let me fire up SQL Server Management Studio. Actually, I'm not going to do that there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to close that one. Actually, no, I am going to keep that open. So let me Scooter SQL 3. Right. So there's my availability groups, right? This says resolving. However, that's okay. So what I'm going to do is because what I'm gonna, now I'm not going to domain. I'm going to RDP into SQL 1 from the cloud. I'm going to RDP onto my box on-prem. So I RDP'd into my cloud VM. Now from my cloud VM, I'm RDP'ing to my box on-prem. Okay. It looks like we had to restart. So let's fire up SQL Server Management Studio here. Come on. Oops. So there's SQL 1, where it's looking like SQL 1. Oh, come on. There we go. Come on. Not the most powerful server on my in my office. Come on. Oh, you're kidding me. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. Okay, what's going on here? Looks like something's going on. Why is this having problems? Oops. Great. All right. What the heck? Anyway. All right, I'm not gonna sit here and mess with this. I don't know what's going on here. Dang it. Gotta love live demos. I wonder if SQL Server. Oh, you know what? Looks like it rebooted. So I wonder if that just messed stuff up. Oh, well, that would be a problem. So I wonder if SQL Scooter, I wonder if SQL 2 is then having a problem too. All right. So we may have, it looks like it rebooted, so something happened. Looks like it rebooted. I tested this yesterday, it worked, so apparently last night it decided to apply patches and not reboot. All right. So that might be, yeah, recovery pending. Okay, so it looks like I got to reboot SQL 2 too. Anyway, let's look at always on. Yeah, resolving. Looks like I got to go refresh things. Okay. So I should have looked at this morning. When I tested yesterday, everything was up. So the concept here is that I've got, so does it, is this so far, I apologize for the mess up, but is this making sense? So in this scenario, what I would do here is, so my network is communicating, and you can see that here, right? I know my network's communicating, I know there's communication going on, but in this scenario, what I would do is I would take and say, okay, open up SQL, insert a record into this database on SQL 1 and then watch it replicated to SQL 3. Okay, so I know that I'm getting asynchronous synchronization, right? And then the same thing, I'd be able to fail over if I needed to. So the concept would be, if something happens to my on-prem data center or my on-prem network, I could still RDP into this box, into my Azure VM, do a manual failover, and people could, so that's now the primary, my application could still connect. Okay, that's the concept. So now and from a cost perspective, I'm not paying for a whole second data center, but from a disaster recovery scenario, manual RDP into my Azure VM, do a manual failover, I'm still up and running. Okay, does that make sense? I apologize, for some reason this was, looks like I'm gonna have to go back and reboot some boxes. Okay, so are we good? So does that make sense? Are we good? Okay, so scenario one is that everything's up in the VM, right? High availability, people aren't really ready for that yet because people aren't really, really willing to take their entire SQL infrastructure and move that to the cloud. But they are willing to say, well, you know what, I still want to keep my on-prem environment, but let me use Azure as a disaster recovery scenario, or the ability to offload a lot of my workload to the cloud, right, for a much much lower cost than having a second data center, okay? So that's what that's what we're talking about there. All right, so in the last 10 minutes, what I want to talk about is some differences between, so let me talk about, show you the VM sizes, right, and limits. And what I want to get to is kind of differences between SQL Server and SQL Azure, okay? Or anything else you guys want to talk about, okay? All right. So we have had for quite a long time these. You should be familiar with these, right? We've had extra small to extra large probably for a couple years now, right? So there's the CPU cores, how much memory you get, and the SQL edition you can put in those, right? What we just announced, right, is a new set of virtual machine sizes that are much bigger. And why did we do this, right? So A5 to A9, you know, 16 cores up to 112 gig, right? Why would we release, if you think about the next version of SQL Server, why would we release larger VMs? What's one of the technologies that's coming out in SQL Server 2014? Yeah, who said that? Yes, so the in-memory OLTP, right? So these larger VM sizes will now allow you to run your in-memory OLTP applications in the cloud, right? And so we created virtual machine sizes big enough to be able to run that and run those, right? So up to 16 cores and 112 gig of RAM, right? You do know that for each virtual machine, you can go into the virtual machine, and hopefully you did know this. So I can pick a virtual machine. I'll just pick one. And I can attach. Oh, crud. I keep forgetting to do that. 5 more minutes? Hard stop. Oh, okay. All right, 5 more minutes. Okay, hard stop in 5 minutes. All right, so can you guys see this down here? Right. What this means is I can attach, depending on the virtual machine size, I can attach up to 16 1-terabyte disks to these virtual machines, right? What's the significance of that? How much would it cost you to do 16 1-terabyte disks on-prem? I don't know what... A lot. Okay. If I were to attach 16 1-terabyte disks in the cloud, how much would that cost me? If I went and said, okay, if I did attach empty disk and said 1023, I know it's 1024, but for some reason I have to do 1023, and I don't know, and did that 16 times and attached 16 1-terabyte disks to this VM, how much would that cost me right now if I were to attach this? How much would that cost me? Zero, right? Because what it does it really go out and provision 16 1-terabyte disks? No, it doesn't. What it does, it says, basically it's a quota, right? It says you can have up to 16 1-terabyte space, we'll call them spaces, right? And I only pay for the amount of data. So if I create a 1-terabyte disk, but then upload a 1-gig file, I'm only paying for that 1-gig file, right? So what's significant here is, again, the cost savings for using Windows Azure, because I can have up to 16 1-terabyte disks, but only pay for the amount of storage that I use in those disks, right? So this is significant, right? Is that we now have bigger virtual machines, and I gotta be cognizant of time, 2 more minutes. Right, but now have the ability to create much bigger virtual machines, be able to run bigger workloads, right, and only pay for the amount of space that I use, right? Okay, let me talk about really quick differences. Is there any questions you guys, specific questions you guys have, what we talked about? None? Oh, yes. Sorry. So it's that cluster is the Windows Server failover cluster. So in terms of clustering, you need a core member, right? Think of it like in availability groups. Think of it like a witness, right? So it you won't have the quorum if you don't. So if I just had one, So I need to have the Windows Server failover cluster for the core mentality, or else I wouldn't have that high availability. So think of it like in the mirroring, think of it like a witness. No. Nope. So that's what I was saying here. Again, close this. Oops, I just attached a disk. Oh well. Okay, so Windows Server 2012. Windows Server 2012, NoSQL. Windows Server 2012 running SQL Server 2012. Okay, so what I did is, and this, so again, print out that document, right? Because what I'll walk you through is the reason it's 98 pages because it actually explains why you need these things, right? So there's no question, right? Does this because I install Windows Server Failover Clustering on this box, and then you install it on all three of these. So that one, and that one, right? This gives me, it's called the CORM mentality. CORM, you know what a CORM is? CORM mentality, right? So in other words, I don't have true failover clustering unless I have the CORM mentality, right? It's like a witness, right? So yes, so SQL is not on the server failover cluster. Odd number of nodes, right? For true failover, for availability groups and true failover clustering, I need an odd. I need that. Okay. So the difference between SQL Server and a VM and SQL Azure is SQL Azure is the platform as a service, right? And there's some differences, right? You don't get encryption. This is where we manage the infrastructure, but you get to code and do all that. There's no support for service broker or full text search or things like that. These VMs are full SQL Server, right? So you get the BI, you get analysis services. It is full SQL Server in these virtual machines to set up, replicate, if you want to set up replication and things like that. Okay. So it made some minor differences. There's some documentation. If you email me, I can point you to some documentation that explains, deep differences. But for the most part, SQL Azure, Windows Azure SQL Database is SQL Server. It's just you cannot do things like mirroring and replication because it's just it's a database. It's a platform database, right? But it is SQL Server, so you get tables, views, stored procedures, all that great stuff, right? That makes sense? All right, any other questions? I guess we have a hard stop right now. And I apologize for the demos. I thought that was working, but apparently they rebooted, so I apologize. But I highly recommend print out that document, and I'll make these slides available. But anyway, thanks for coming. I appreciate it.